This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Goats, honestly, we could only find very, very few whom we can recognize. And we, it was mixed with hundreds of sheep and goats. And I mean, they were all mixed together, I mean, with blood. And they got, they were bombed with about six or seven.
Sheikh Salah bin Farid and Nasser al-Awlaki, I want to thank you both for being with us. We're so sorry the broadcast has ended. We will continue the conversation after, posted at democracynow.org. Dirty Wars, which covers this, opens today in Washington, D.C., in Los Angeles, and in New York at the IFC in Lincoln Plaza, in Washington East Street Theater, and in at the Landmark Theater in Los Angeles. Jeremy Scahill, thanks so much for being with us. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is 8 a.m. Stay tuned next for Positively Revolting. This morning, Ani and Lynn will speak with Sasha Bookert from Basic Rights Oregon about what's going on to break down barriers for trans people. Coming up next, right after these announcements.
KBOO Community Radio, West Coast Horticulture, and Higher Reasoning Reggae Time are proud to sponsor electro dub artist Gowdy with Indubious and Higher Reasoning Sound, June 7th at 9 p.m. at the Alhambra Theater, formerly the Mount Tabor Theater. Tickets for this 21 and over show are on sale now at brownpapertickets.com. $1 from each ticket sold goes directly to KBOO. That's Gowdy with Indubious and Higher Reasoning Sound, June 7th at the Alhambra Theater, 4811 Southeast Hawthorne in Portland.
And good morning. Good morning. It is 4 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, and you are listening to Positively Revolting on your community radio station, KBOO. I'm Ani, and along with Lynn.
Yes. That is Lynn. I am Lynn. Yes.
She acknowledges.
And along. Yes.
And she's positive this morning. We are here hosting this fine program for y'all. And this morning, our guest is Sasha Bookert, communications manager and trans policy advocate.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, with Basic Rights Oregon. And we are so happy you're with us this morning, Sasha. Thank you very much for joining us as we are looking to discuss many issues around what it is, what it's like, what the basic challenges that trans people face in daily lives. This is one of those areas that really is coming far more to the fore in the last couple of years than it has in the past, and that's a very good thing. And I think it's one of those issues that the more we talk about the challenges faced by trans people, the more allies and, well, the cis-bodied world can figure out exactly how it is to shift things, to help things sort of give way so that, in fact, trans people can enjoy full civil and human rights along with everyone else, right? Yeah. So thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Let's go ahead and let's start in with definitions, because I think, again, unless you know and love a trans person, and maybe even if you do, there's still a lot of confusion around what does it mean when I say trans person or cis-bodied? What do these terms mean? They're not in common usage. What's the difference between being trans and being, you know, just anyone else, or, you know, a little gay, or, you know, something? What's up with this trans identity?
Yeah, thanks, Ani. Yeah, it's a really great question. And I know you know as much about this as I do, so feel free to chime in. But the way we use transgender at Basic Rights Oregon is as a really broad umbrella term to define anyone basically who either is someone who it's just an umbrella term that's used for people whose gender identity or gender expression differs than what's typically associated with the assigned birth sex. So we use that really broadly to include, you know, anyone from someone who cross-dresses or a drag queen or a drag king to somebody who is seeking fully transition-related health care. So it's just a broad umbrella term. Sometimes people define it a little more narrowly, but we don't. We like to keep it super broad. And the definition of cisgender came about within the community, and again, feel free to chime in, but I think that the idea behind it is that there's an assumption that, you know, when you talk about transgender people, you create this sense of otherness, you know, that, you know, what isn't transgender is natural and normal, and transgender is other, you know, so it's just a way to say, no, this is just a different identity, you know, you identify with the birth sex that you were assigned, and I don't. That's the difference, you know, we're both in the same plane. So, and there's some other terms too, I think, that are worth fleshing out a little bit, you know. So I just wanted to touch on, you know, like the word queer, for example. Mm-hmm. You'll hear that often in the community, and it's a little bit of a trigger word, you know, with some of the older people in our community, so I want to own that too. But we do use it frequently, and you hear it more and more, and it's a way to, like, degender. Sometimes people use the word gay just to generally describe LGBT people, and it has a specific gender associated with it. So we're, you know, that's why you'll hear the word queer rather than just gay to refer to the entire LGBTQ community. Mm-hmm. And another distinction I think is important to make is something that is occasionally confused in discussion, is the distinction between sexual orientation and gender identity, you know, and they get kind of lumped in.
They absolutely
even
do.
Even statutorily sometimes, which creates a mess. But the difference, you know, that our, you know, the way we define it as a gender identity, again, is your gender identity that is how you identify as either a man or a woman or somewhere in between. And sexual orientation is defined as who you're attracted to, you know, whether it's a man or a woman or someone in between. So it's a, you know, it's a distinction. So that's just important.
It's a huge distinction.
Thanks, Luke.
It is. And yet it really does seem like so many people don't quite get that distinction. Unless of course you are living in a community that is that actually has very active trans and queer folks in it who are more than happy to help you understand that this is in fact a very different thing. I mean, I myself have been using the word queer for 20 years or more. Back when I was in college, I remember getting in trouble, actually, as a student leader for talking about the queers, the Queer Alliance sort of groups that I was working with, and was told that that was hate speech and inappropriate. You know, whereas I was really consciously using that word because I wanted to lump all of us who are considered other by the straight world. I'll just go ahead and say that together, because I thought that really we have more in common. Yeah. And that to start doing our line dividing about, you know, are you a lesbian? Are you gay? Are you bi? Are you trans? Are you whatever it is, was a way to keep us small. And so I've been enjoying the word queer for years, and I like the fact that we are reclaiming it. I think that it's a good generalist term.
Yeah, and as the alphabet soup grows, as we become a more and more inclusive movement, it just makes it a little easier than when we're including questioning and intersex folks, and it gets to be quite an alphabet soup. So it's easy.
Even I have been leaving off initials on the fine acronym that it grows and grows by leaps and bounds.
On Portland's wonderful mini alphabet soup out loud, which I know Sasha's part of too. I was listening to it this week, and there was a woman, because there's a Dykes parade, and there was many, many definitions going on, and it was interesting. And I always remember Margaret Cho saying, "I just couldn't figure out what was going on. Wait, I'm just a slut. Where's my parade? I'm sorry." She
like
still
Margaret
has come
Cho.
Out, yes, but I think she has since come out. It's like, and then sometimes people can get caught up in way too many definitions, don't you think? And in the end, we are all folks, we are all in this together.
But the thing is that if you are a trans person, if you
want to know who you are, you need to, yes, I understand
but,
that.
But in the grander scheme of the world, you have certain challenges that cis-bodied people don't really have to think about.
Nope, I know.
And let's start with some real basics like identification. What happens? There you are in your teens, in your 20s, in your 30s, in your 40s, in your 50s, and you are coming out as a trans person. What's some of that process involved in just the logistics beyond the internal, dialogue and the, self-realizations? Now you're interacting with the rest of the world, and you need to have a driver's license that might want to reflect your name and gender appropriately. How does one go about doing that? What kind of challenges are there?
Yeah, thanks, honey. That's a really great question. And, there's some huge, huge challenges. And as all KABU listeners know, ID context are really, really tricky. There was this study released about 4 or 5 years ago that talked to about 6,500 trans people about issues that they face in the community. And one of the issues was, changing ID documents. And they found that just over a third of the folks who had fully transitioned, I'm not sure exactly how they define that, but people who had been transitioning for a while had never changed their ID documents. And as we know, as the right continues to move forward voter ID laws and make it more and more difficult to vote or be employed in a number of contexts, that it's really disenfranchised, tens of thousands of transgender voters. But to answer your question, there's a huge number of obstacles. Just you thinking about changing your driver's license. In Oregon, we're lucky enough that to change a driver's license, a gender marker on a driver's license, isn't as onerous as it is in some other states here. It requires you to go seek a therapist and seek therapy and obtain a letter from a World Professional Association of Transgender Healthcare certified therapist, which sounds simple, but can be a huge...
Doesn't sound simple to me at all.
Yeah, no. And
eye color, much easier to change, huh? Even though you don't really change it. Yeah, that's real interesting.
Yeah, and there's always the risk that you'll find a therapist that's hostile, and there are resources out there to find trans-friendly folks. I want to point that out right away. There's a resourcespdx.org is a website that lists, trans-friendly therapists that are on that, so I would recommend folks going that way or talking to people in the community about, trans-friendly therapists. But, that in itself is a big hurdle just to, go and pay and, unfortunately...
Change the
a letter on your driver's license.
Yeah, and unfortunately, so many healthcare plans currently just exclude healthcare for trans folks. So even the mental healthcare counseling that they need to change a driver's license is excluded in their healthcare plan. So you're paying for it out of pocket. You're taking a risk. You don't know if the therapist is going to require you to go through, you know, 1 month or a year, 2 years, you know, it depends on the therapist, you know, so there's a lot of subjectivity. There's a lot of gatekeeping that is an obstacle for a lot of trans people just to change a driver's license. And in Oregon, we're lucky. In some states, they require, you know, surgery of some kind, which if you can't get health care, if you can't get mental health care counseling covered in your health plan, you're not going to get surgery covered. So paying out of pocket for that makes it virtually impossible, which, you know, it's cyclical because if you can't change your documentation, you're not going to find meaningful employment, you know.
So it is a really big cycle. I'm really glad you brought up that aspect because, you know, again, in order, and let's talk about healthcare. I mean, that's sort of a natural segue at this point. For whatever reason, prejudice exists against trans people in a really big way. And this, I think, creates sort of a desire on the behalf of many trans folk to pass as not even, you know, not trans. I am woman, I am man. And sometimes that's in response to the prejudice. Sometimes it's just generally an internal feeling. This is who I am in the world. You know, sorry about that birth thing. You know, moving on, and this is who I am now. You know, but for a lot of people, it becomes sort of a game of appearances, trying to pass. And by passing, I mean not only passing for the gender that you feel you are, but passing as in just trying to get through your day with a minimal amount of hassle and hate thrown at you. And a lot of that is based on how you are perceived by others. And a lot of that comes into issues of transitioning and being able to have access to trans healthcare. Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I'll try to touch on the first piece.
I know that was kind of a big one. We can unpack it.
I think that as a movement, I would just urge us to, you know, build a very broad and inclusive movement, because I think that is a little bit of a trap, is to falling into what I would call the gender binary, you know, and I don't advocate for that. I feel like we, you know, we're like the rainbow. There's many different colors of gender, and we should just, you know, be ourselves and not try to fit, especially, you know, coming from a feminist critique, falling into what has stereotypically been defined as a woman in our society, you know, isn't something I would recommend. People should just, you know, find their own way. And I heard once on a podcast about somebody was talking about gender identity and saying, you know, you should just be able to go into a box and pick the gender identity toys that fit you the best, rather than trying to like look outside for ways to fit into this larger culture. You know, so just find yourself your own way. The healthcare issue is a big issue, and that's what we work on mostly at Basic Rights Oregon. You know, we went out into the community. We have a transgender justice working group that is the leadership that's moving this work forward, you know, in Oregon. And we've had some amazing successes that I'll scream about in a second here. But I just wanted to say that when we first decided how we were going to move forward with our transgender justice program at Basic Rights Oregon, we went out and talked to the community, because that's what we feel as a grassroots organization is the best way to move forward, rather than trying to figure it out in, you know, in an office downtown. You know, we went out and did, you know, listening sessions with people, and the number one priority for folks was healthcare, you know, overwhelmingly. So that's how we've moved forward. And we've worked with other organizations nationally and continued to like work on those issues just locally. And I'm really proud of the work we've actually done. I mean, a lot of folks probably know about the huge victory at the city of Portland a couple of years ago. That was an amazing moment when the mayor.
But go ahead and tell the listeners about that huge victory, because I don't think all of our listeners know about it.
Oh, great. Yeah. So in June 2011, we had been working with the city council and talking to them about healthcare issues for trans folks, and just as a little bit of an overview on the policy stuff. So, you know, up to that time, you know, most insurance policies just categorically excluded any kind of healthcare coverage for trans people, you know, in a number of different ways. Either they defined it as a pre-existing condition, or that it was not medically necessary, or for just a number of different ways it was excluded. And, you know, we went and talked to the, you know, the city council, and they did a lot of research on their own. I don't feel like, you know, this is something that, you know, we necessarily changed their minds on. They you know, evolved, you know, like the country as a general rule is evolving on these issues, whether it's gay issues and gay and lesbian issues or transgender issues. You know, there's a journey that people are going on, and I feel like that was another piece of that. But we talked to them about, you know, the fact that the healthcare that we're seeking has been defined for a really long time now. I think it's over like 6-7 years as medically necessary by the preeminent healthcare organization in the country, the American Medical Association, the American Psychological Association at the time, the Endocrine Society, even the IRS has defined transition-related healthcare and gender-affirming healthcare as medically necessary. So, you know, we feel like, you know, if all of these august bodies are defining this healthcare medically necessary, that it's time for the insurance companies to step up and make the change. And we urge the city council
Nothing
to make
august
change.
About insurance companies.
No, exactly. Yeah. And we also talked about cost, because that's a huge issue for a lot of folks, you know. And, you know, of course, we went into a case study involving the county and city of San Francisco, who's had fully inclusive healthcare since 2001, and they were one of the first. They were the first municipality to actually adopt fully inclusive healthcare, and they had a big concern. You know, San Francisco's got a really large LGBT community, and there was this fear or perception that there would be this magnet effect that hordes of trans people from all around the country were going to move to San Francisco and take advantage of their healthcare plan. But so they adopted $1.70. Surcharge for their per employee per month, you know, for their coverage of the healthcare. And after like 4 or 5 years, they gathered over $4 million or something and paid out just $150,000 in claims. So the utilization rates were like minimal. They actually dropped the premium completely after a few years. So, you know, it was, you know, and we worked with the city of Portland, and their initial, you know, numbers came in really high. And we worked with them and said, we're like, no, not every trans person wants to get a surgery every year. You know, we just want...
Come on, they're so in vogue. I mean, you just a little surgery, a little spa, a little you know, trip to the ice cream parlor, right? I mean,
yeah, exactly. You know, and then, and I also just want to, just as tangent on that, you know, I think that it's important to point out too that healthcare needs for trans folks are, you know, abroad. They're typically the same healthcare needs that any cisgender person needs. There are mental health care counseling, hormone replacement therapy, you know, et cetera. So. And medically necessary healthcare. But the issue with cost is interesting, because the city of Portland, after working with us, actually ran some other numbers, realistic numbers based on San Francisco's experience. And some, there's a lot of businesses that have had fully inclusive healthcare in Multnomah County as well. And they ended up coming in deciding that the cost would be less than 0.1% of their entire healthcare budget for the year. So like little social math is that if you had 1,000 pennies and you threw them all on the floor, you could pick up one penny out of that 1,000 pennies, and that would be the healthcare cost for trans health. Care, you know, so it was a huge win. And it just being at the city hall when the vote took place, it was a unanimous vote, and it was just really awe-inspiring and beautiful, you know, that there was this. I mean, for me, it was, you know, it was definitely a great healthcare win, but it was also an affirmation of trans identity and just a huge step forward for our community. And we've had huge wins since then, and I can talk about those, but it's going to be a big conversation.
It is. Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and let folks know what we're doing. This is Ani. I'm here with Lynn. Our guest this morning is Sasha Bookert. She is the communications manager and trans policy advocate at Basic Rights Oregon. You are listening to Positively Revolting. If you want to be a part of this conversation, you can call us right now, 503-231-8187. Please join us with your questions, your comments. And also, just to let you know, you can follow us all week long on Facebook. We are, you know, we have a nice little community developing mm-hmm. there, I think. Mm-hmm. And if you'd like to do that, of course, just go to Facebook and you can find us as Positively Revolting, and go ahead, join the fan page and be a part of the conversation throughout the week. You can also contact us via Gmail at positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. So, again, that phone number, 503-231-8187. Join us on the air right now. And then you know, we can see where we go with your input. But where we're going without your input is, yeah, let's go ahead and talk about that other exciting thing that's happened very recently in terms of healthcare.
Yeah, and there's just so much, actually. It's just been a sea change in healthcare for trans folks and other issues, too, in the last few years. But probably the biggest victory and for trans healthcare in the last few years was that in January, the Insurance Division of Oregon issued a bulletin clarifying that the Oregon Equality Act, which is Oregon's non-discrimination protections, would be defined moving forward that any health care given to non-transgender people had to be given to transgender people. And that means that insurance policies that are approved in the state of Oregon would be covered. Now, that doesn't include public insurance. It doesn't include Medicaid and the Oregon Health Plan. And it doesn't include health insurance plans that are governed by national companies. But any insurance company in the state of Oregon that's governed by the insurance division moving forward has to be covered. Now, we know as a community, and I heard this said yesterday on the radio, it's one thing to have these policies and laws in place. It's a completely different thing, you know, to have them go into effect and actually change people's lives on the ground. And that's why it's really so important that, A, we build up a robust grassroots movement, not just for trans healthcare and trans identity, but as a social justice movement in general. It's just critical that we continue to do that work to beat back, you know, attacks on our communities in any form, because we just need to have that piece in place. And also, it's really important that we have groups like Basic Rights Oregon that can, you know, advocate for folks who are running into issues. So if you are curious and you want to know more information, on our website at basicrights.org, there's a blog post that kind of goes into frequently asked questions about the Insurance Division bulletin, and also guides people to where they should go if they're denied treatment from their provider, you know, that is an Oregon-based insurance policy.
Excellent.
Excellent, excellent. And we have a phone call. Natasha?
Hi there.
Hi. Good morning. Good morning. You're on the air.
I'm intersex, actually. I have complete androgyny insensitivity syndrome. I've been denied by my OHP, you know, it's my medical provider, and I don't get my testosterone covered. But it's a very complicated issue because it's still under, people just don't know how to deal with this kind of syndrome, mm-hmm. basically. Mm-hmm. And similar to transsexual healthcare, it's I also have to be under hormone replacement therapy. And currently, they believe that you only need one estrogen to be a human, basically. And women and men both have testosterone, mm-hmm. and I think that's yeah. a very important point to make.
Yeah.
We both have estrogen as well, so mm-hmm. that's pretty much it, I guess. As far as your thoughts or anything like that, as far as if I don't get coverage, what would you, do you recommend as far as getting better health coverage through OHP? Any support through there, or to either just not get my medication covered, or to find a different? Because endocrinologists basically, it's against their policy to give me male hormone levels because they see me as a woman, though I was born with gonads on the inside, which were removed.
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, and there are a lot of crossover issues, you know, that intersex folks face and trans folks face. And, you know, right. my recommendation is always that we work together, you know, so I would recommend contacting Basic Rights and getting involved with our, you know, our transgender justice. We don't do specifically intersex work, but
okay.
we definitely would love to work with you together on that, because public insurance is definitely something that, you know, we're working on as well and want to expand
yeah.
their healthcare coverage.
Yeah, they definitely don't cover testosterone for women who need it right now. So that's an important issue, as well as with the, you know, any kind of company. The only person I've been able to find is, you know, through different clinics and things like that. But endocrinology is very uh-huh. uptight, I might put it that way.
They're moving forward, though. There was a huge victory.
Very slow.
A little yeah. too slowly Germany, for Natasha, I
think. In Germany, they're doing research on my condition with testosterone treatment, but not here in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
Natasha,
an issue.
Thank you so much for calling in this morning.
Thank
Absolutely.
You.
You know, as this discussion goes, it's just like it always blows me away and keeps blowing me away how locked in to one to the two particular genders we all are. I always remember when I was four, I was standing around some adults, and it suddenly occurred to me that there were only two genders, because that had never occurred to me before. And it's like one of my earliest childhood memories about it. It was so shocking.
Yeah,
I thought, really?
Yeah,
it seemed very strange. I must be from a planet where that doesn't happen. But
and I think we all know this. I think we all know. I mean, I shouldn't say this. I feel like maybe we all kind of know that's not really true, though. I think that even people that don't identify as transgender, people that identify as cisgender, know that, you know, in many parts of their lives that they've faced situations where, you know, they don't feel like they're a man, quote, or a woman, quote. You know, they're somewhere in between.
Yes, so there's six or seven. It's nice to know that this is, like, going on now. But, yes, as a four-year-old child, and it was just drilled right into you that this is, yes, that's it.
Yeah. Well, there's
one, there's two, that's
and it's
it.
Sexist and racist.
And that's exactly what I was going to go into.
Anyist you can possibly get along with.
And I'd love to actually talk for a moment about that particular thing, how binary gender roles really props up patriarchy. You know, to me, looking at what makes somebody a real man, what makes somebody a real woman. You know, we are talking about gender role socializations, and we're talking about very patriarchally based gender role prescriptions, right? Uh-huh. This is how you behave. Uh-huh. And as you were saying, Sasha, most of us don't actually fit neatly into that. Really, I don't think any one person every day of their life has no transgression, you know, over those appropriate binary gender role lines, because, you know, we're human, and those lines are kind of artificial. Now, I know I'm speaking from my personal perspective, and I get that a lot of people feel far more inclined towards one of those genders, and may want to take on that that socialization.
Yeah.
Okay. It's certainly your prerogative, I suppose, but it's not the only way of being. And in fact, to insist on a real rigid gender binary division is to reinforce the patriarchy, is to reinforce sexism. Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely do. You know, one thing that I've been thinking about a lot lately, and this is something I've never really heard expressed before in talking about this issue, but there's the bathroom issue that a lot of trans folks face.
We were going to get there before the end of the show.
We'll open up that can of worms.
Yeah.
So
it's 8:31. Open it now.
Yeah. So, you know, just as an advocate, I got to preface whatever I say with this, that, you know, it's really, really inherently dangerous for trans folks to be using a bathroom that's not that they don't identify with, you know, and there's never been cases of transgender people going into bathrooms that they identify with and causing violence and causing, you know, what's purported by our opponents, you know, when they want to defeat employment discriminations in other states. That's how they use it. They used it,
the bathroom thing.
Yeah. Oh, but the issue dealing with, you know, essentialist binary constructs that I never really heard talked about a lot before that I think is really interesting is that it's just kind of sad to me that, you know, I don't, of course, define transgender women as men, but even if you did, like, what, you know, what are men that are advocating that teaching that all men are predatory? You know, it's so sad that they would do that they would, like, treat men that they just can't control their impulses. And, you know, it's so sad because, like, almost all the men I know are respectful, hardworking, decent people. You know, it's so, like,
you don't have to hide the women and children around them.
Yeah.
I mean,
they may have other issues, but not that.
Right.
Yeah, right?
Exactly. But yeah, I think it's a real danger to get caught up into, like, one or the other. And then, because we all are fall somewhere in between. And if you decide that you create these essentialist gender constructs that are, if you decide they're natural and real, you're always going to, like, be insecure. You're never going to find any kind of peace. You're always going to be thinking, oh, I'm still not, you know, butch enough or femme enough. There's no end to it, you know.
It's very true. I mean, you can't, I don't think any person can live up to these idealized and what do I want to say? Artificial social constructs. You know, we will always fall somewhere short of the mark of that idealization. And then we internalize that. And that's, you know, that's not a good system. So breaking out of gender binary, breaking out of sexual socialization, I think is an important part of our development as human beings, as a species. Whether we look at ourselves as trans or cis, or, you know, intersex in some way, whatever it is, to hold ourselves into that binary artificial construct, I don't think it serves humanity.
No. Well, and you know, if you read fantasy or science fiction, there's hardly any future.
Ursula.
I was just reading some essays by Margaret Atwood, and there's hardly ever a future that's envisioned that has more gender identification. No, it's always less in every sort of futuristic thing. It doesn't seem like we ever go to. Well, maybe there's one or two, but for the most part, most fantasy, science fiction, futuristic things have a less gender defined world.
Less gender defined. Yeah, okay. Right.
Not there, maybe, but way less gender defined.
Yeah, well, I mean, Ursula. That's all I can say.
I know.
Yeah. Go read Ursula a lot.
They're staging a performance, too.
Mostly sold out.
Oh.
But it's been extended for a week.
Oh, good.
But it's mostly sold out. Okay.
And
Left Hand of Darkness is playing in town for the next week.
I think it's our own Ursula.
Portland's, I think it's the Portland Ursula, Playhouse, yes. I think. Anyways.
But read it if you can't
digress.
See it.
How does that happen? And it is about 35 after 8 o'clock in the morning. Again, that phone number to call in is 503-231-8187. You can get in on this conversation, and we'd love to hear from you. You can also follow us on Facebook, where you can find us at Positively Revolting. Go ahead and like our fan page and follow along. But getting back to bathrooms.
Mm-hmm.
I know that, you know, this is one of those things that I cannot fathom why it's a big deal. I just cannot fathom why it's a big deal. I remember being
Segregated bathrooms are a stupid idea anyway.
That's why I'm saying I can't imagine why it's a big deal. You know, I remember being in high school, and that was actually, I can't remember the conservative senator that was, you know, all red in the face and yelling about it because, you know, it's been 30 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. But the ERA was being trotted out, right? Mm-hmm. We were trying to pass the Equal Rights Amendment. This is about 1980-ish. And I remember some very conservative politician that said, if we pass that, it's going to mean that everyone has to use the same bathroom. And I will not
stand
and
for this.
It's like the end of Western civilization as we know it. And I remember being like 15, 16, and going,
really?
What? Yeah. That's why I can't have equal rights, because this guy is worried about who's going to use a bathroom?
Well,
like, please.
I remember going to Europe for the first time and seeing that people use, and they seem to, civilization seemed to maintain its course, and people.
Are you telling me that all genders can use the same bathroom in
apparently
Europe?
So. What? In some places, what? Most of the places. Yes, it's odd, but it seems to work.
You know, so in full disclosure, my partner is Teresa Mitchell. She does Press Watch. She is an amazing trans person herself. Mm-hmm. And yes. As she was working at TriMet, Regional Bus Services, you know, one of the first issues she had to deal with was bathrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And so they made a bathroom available that is, in fact, a gender neutral, non-defined bathroom. And that's the one she's supposed to use. Anyone else can use it.
Mm-hmm. She got a private bathroom out of the deal.
She got a private bathroom out of the deal.
It's unfortunate, but.
But, you know, and again, though, it just makes me a little bit crazy. You know, it's like, I'm used to, say, family situations, communal households. We all use the same bathroom. We make it work. There are certainly small businesses that have but one bathroom. They make it work. But why is it such a freaking big deal to all of a sudden, I know there's been some work done at PCC
mm-hmm.
where people are advocating that there are, in fact, non-defined bathrooms that anyone can be comfortable using.
Yeah.
Where am I in the spectrum? I don't know. This is something I question a fair amount. I reject gender role socialization pretty emphatically. But I have always felt very girl identified. Okay, I'm a girl. But I do have a beard. I won't shave it. I'm gender queer somewhere in the spectrum. You know, other people will label me many things. I try not to label myself so much. I know that I have caught holy hell for using a women's restroom. My response to that is usually to quickly lift my shirt and swear at people. Because that's who I am.
I was gonna,
my response.
I was going to wonder if you lifted your skirt.
No, it's usually in a restaurant. I'll only do so much. why am I using that bathroom? Because shirt lift here, and then I bounce out and, go talk to my friends a lot about stupid people in this planet. So, but again, what on earth are we talking about? What is the big deal? That's my question.
Yeah, it's a really good question. I can just say personally, I guess it's a really, really difficult thing for a trans person. And there's actually been a lot of folks who identify as trans who have had medical complications from holding it because they're so insecure. Mm-hmm. And I still face those issues when I travel. You know, I think to myself, am I landing in a state? Am I going to be able to use the bathroom, in this airport? Should I be going on the plane? You know, it's an issue, and it is traumatic. You know, I've never had that happen to me, but, I wouldn't surprise me, and I've heard a lot of folks talk about how that's happened. And there have been people who have, in Utah, there was a case a few years ago involving a trans woman who was a driver who was fired because they wouldn't allow her to use either the men's or the women's restroom. And she filed suit and lost, So that's why having, non-discrimination protections is really important. And I think that, again, just stressing, having those public accommodations protections in place is also is critical, but also just want to reiterate that the opposition that wants to beat back our employment protections uses the bathroom frequently because they know people just have a general distaste for bathrooms, period. it's not a winning discussion.
Right.
So they bring it up at every opportunity they can. But, but it is a really difficult situation. And I just want to stress that in Oregon, employees are protected and should have access legally to the bathroom that is congruent with their gender identity. So if you're transgender, you have, every right to use a bathroom consistent with your gender identity.
Yeah, basic bathroom rights.
Yay.
It only makes sense.
It only makes sense. Well, I want to let you know that you are listening to Positively Revolting Talk Radio. I'm Lynn. I'm here with Ani. Our guest today is Sasha Bookert from Equal Rights, Basic Rights Oregon. I like that. I like Basic Rights better anyway. And we are talking about it's a very broad spectrum about what we're talking about this morning. I don't even know how to categorize it because we're trying not to categorize things. But okay, go ahead. Categorize, honey.
Looking at what it means, how the world looks a little different to trans identified people, and how so many things really present challenges that folks who are not trans identified really don't have to look at. I mean, that's the crux of it for me this morning, is just sort of bringing out. And the bathroom situation, it seems so simple.
Right? Exactly.
Everyone uses
them.
We just want to use the bathroom sometimes. But I know that I myself have accompanied trans women into bathrooms to make sure that they don't get hassled, to make sure that they can feel safe to freshen up and do whatever it is we do in those bathrooms. That is, and that sadly is the state of bigotry, that we live in, that I have friends that are afraid to use a bathroom.
Yeah.
And to me, that's ridiculous. And if you are not a trans person, and if you don't have a trans person in your close personal family, then maybe you don't know that is actually the state of bigotry and hatred that we live amongst.
Yeah. And I just want to... I'm going to forget unless I say this. Please. Sorry to interrupt you. I just want to give a shout out to Grant High School because they also adopted gender-neutral restrooms.
Yes.
But I also want to just touch on the issue of privilege and communities of color that are impacted by the discrimination facing trans communities. Because I think that's true that, cisgender people do have privilege, and that's one of the first things I realized after transitioning was how much privilege I had, and I'm learning about, still learning about, as far as racial issues go, I don't walk around all day thinking about the color of my skin, and you know that's privilege, you know, and that translates into a whole host of different contexts, but there is gender privilege for sure. And also I just want to like highlight again, you know, how disproportionately, you know, these issues impact trans people of color, because, you know, the numbers that are really bad for just transgender people in general are
the quadruple whammy, isn't it?
Yeah. And you know, and so many folks get enmeshed in within our prison industrial complex because of the issue of, you know, so many people that identify as trans can't get the appropriate documentation because they can't get employment because of the discrimination issues, especially outside of Oregon. You know, so they end up working in street economies, which means they get enmeshed in the prison industrial complex, which, you know, if folks don't know this, haven't been very sensitive to trans issues, you know.
Very sensitive to trans issues.
Yeah, rainy issues, period, yeah.
That is a brilliant understatement,
yeah.
Sasha.
Yeah, thank you. But there has been movement. I just want to stress that too, though, because I feel like just in conjunction with all the healthcare and discrimination movements forward, you know, that there has been movement within that system too. I mean, we need to abolish it. We need to abolish the prison industrial complex. Don't get me wrong. But as long as it's still there, you know, we advocate to make the changes that need to get made. And one of the huge steps forward was recently, you know, before, because people don't have access to healthcare, they can't get, you know, the medically necessary surgeries that are required to have folks segregated based on gender identity. So a person could be living 20, 30 years in a gender identity, get incarcerated, and then put into a prison, you know, with people that aren't their gender identity, which is a really, really obviously, to say the least, dangerous situation. Yeah. You know, and there has been movement forward, though, nationally and in Oregon on that front. So, but I just wanted to like reemphasize how much of an impact this does have on trans people of color. So,
oh, it's huge. Yeah.
Well, someone called in; they didn't apparently want to be on the air, and so they wondered who observes a UA analysis of a trans person, Emma. Apparently,
This gets into that whole. Like when you're getting a pat down, you have to be patted down by somebody of the same gender, which God knows every time I fly, I have something on me that sets off all fluoroscopes within three states or something. I like sequins. I'm sorry. So I always have to, you know, have
it's
the nice
those
lady.
Underwires in your bra.
Yeah, that was it last time. I made sure there was no sequins, but the underwires, I can, whatever. Okay, so there's, you know, there's the nice lady that has to come over and give me a pat down. So I'm guessing it's sort of the same idea in that, you know, you have certain events like pat downs at airports or UAs at your workplace, certain events that we have in our lives, and wondering how in a gender binary world what does happen with trans identified people. Is that something that there's any real precedent around?
You know, there isn't, you know, that I've heard of, but I can just fall back on, you know, the legal aspect, I guess, in that because of the non-discrimination protections you're talking about. In Oregon, if you identify, you know, as transgender, you have the right to demand that you have someone consistent with your gender identity in the restroom. So that's what I would recommend if that's what the question is. But I don't know what's actually happened in reality. You know, again, there's the law and then there's actual reality. So, you know.
Law and practice,
yeah.
as it is. So we'll just want to take one little minute to tell everybody what's coming up on this wonderful radio station, KBOO. At 9 o'clock, APA Compass features interviews with authors Chitra Banjari, Davakuri, on the complex mixture of traditional and contemporary India today in her latest novel, Oleander Girl. C.P. Chang on the challenges of interracial relationships. And Ruth Ozeki on her latest novel, A Tale for the Time Being, which brings together Tokyo and British Columbia. At 10 o'clock, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, more on how and why the NSA is keeping track of the telephone habits of Americans. That's a lot of work. Also, more on the Bradley Manning trial and more on Obama's nomination of Samantha Powers to be the next U.S. ambassador to the UN. At 11 o'clock, Shahid Hamid hosts It Takes a Village. At 11:30 on the Radio Zine, Robin Shanti interviews Michael O'Connor of Creative Collaborations about Hump Day, a monthly art and music festival held in Portland's Central East Side Industrial District. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not a KBOO member, you can remedy that really easily. You can just go onto KBOO.fm and click on Donate Today. It's easy as pie, and you'll be happy when you do it. And just sort of while we're announcing things, I was going to talk about the Walmart.
Yes, please.
That it's a National Day of Action. I'm sure Sasha will not mind me doing that at all, right? June 7th is a National Day of Action against Walmart in Tigard. They are holding a protest in Tigard near the proposed construction site of Walmart's new supercenter, virtually on top of a nationally registered wetland. No Walmart in Tigard hopes you will join them as we tell Walmart to stay out of Tigard or anywhere else. It's on Facebook, so you can know Walmart in Tigard. You can check it out there, and it's going to be on Pacific Highway and 72nd Avenue at 5 p.m. today, folks. So it's a lovely day. Show up. It'll be fun to see your friends and peeps, and say no to Walmart. Always a good thing.
Indeed.
Indeed, really.
Saying no to Walmart. Yes. Well, we have only about 10 minutes left. And I wanted to get to resources for trans people. How can trans folk find support, help, and actual advice in navigating a complex legal system that unfortunately seems to have a lot to do with how we can maneuver in the world?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you. So I just want to make two quick announcements before I jump
list
of work with Basic Rights Oregon. We have besides our transgender justice program, we also work on winning the freedom to marry for all committed gay and lesbian couples in Oregon, and we are going to be the first state to overturn a constitutional amendment limiting the freedom to marry in 2014. So we just urge people to get involved. We're at OregonUnitedForMarriage.org, and you can find out ways to get involved that way. And we're also going to be at Pride, so I just recommend people coming by and talking to us. We have a racial justice and alliance building program that works on immigration reform and building up the visibility of leaders of color, queer leaders of color. So come down, get involved with us, or get involved with the trans program. And then as far as resources go, yeah, Basic Rights Org, www.basicrights.org has a ton of resources, and I just want to go through them real quickly. We have a Know Your Rights guide that was put together by a legal advisory group that touches on all the issues we've talked about today, whether it's changing documentation, access to health care, discrimination issues. If you feel like you've been, facing a situation involving discrimination, you should contact the Bureau of Labor and Industries or BOLI, and it kind of walks you through the general information. But feel free to contact us by phone or email at just bro@basicrights.org, bro@basicrights.org, or call us. We're totally there for you. We don't do direct representation, but we can give you general information about, the general state of the law for trans folks in Oregon. Also, there's a what we call our Blueprint for Equality toolkit, which is on our website, which is free. All these resources are free, of course, but it walks people through how to advocate with their employer about how to win fully inclusive health care. And it talks about all of the issues we talked about today about it being medically necessary, and it walks through the case studies for the cost issues and just a whole host of other stuff. It lists insurance companies and the number of companies now that offer it. And by the way, that's something we haven't talked about, but OHSU announced in January December that they were going to be offering fully inclusive healthcare, and that's the largest employer in Oregon. So there's been a siege, and they're just joining a whole host of other companies like Intel and New Seasons, and there's just a ton. So it's really definitely a sea change. So that's one thing I just wanted to mention too. But also, there are great national organizations doing this work. The Transgender Law Center has a website that you can access, or go to their Facebook page, or go to our Facebook page and like us. And there's a lot of resources. Just nationally, they're not specifically targeting California necessarily or Oregon. They're just issues that people probably want to know about or should know about. So those are two places. And also the National Center for Transgender Equality has a really great website that has a ton of resources that walks through a lot of these different issues. And again, as far as local access to, trans-friendly providers or trans-friendly acupuncturist or trans-friendly, whatever. And I actually updated the website for a year and a half or two. And on the front homepage of that website, resourcespdx.org, it's on the Q Center's website, there's a list of how you change documents. So if folks want to know, like, well, who, where do I go to
That's
change
really
my Social
important.
Security?
That's great, yeah.
So thank you.
No, keep going.
No, that's just a few of them, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I know there's also, like, the ReID program. I don't know if you want to talk about
thank
that.
Thank you. Yeah, that's from Outside In, mm-hmm. and I meant to mention that. And that's, I have the phone number here somewhere. Yeah, that's the phone number. This might be an old phone number, actually, so I think I'm not going to give this out. But if you go to the Outside In website, it's called the ID Project, and they are funded by the Pride Foundation to assist trans-identified folks to change their names on their documents. So it's a way to give you some financial support and help you walk through the legal documents, which can be a little bit challenging. So
you're such a good understater. A little bit challenging.
Yeah. Sasha, the optimist, the understander. So in looking at how things are changing, where do you think things are going in this next year in terms of trans advocacy?
Well, we're going to continue to do the work that we've been doing and we've been charged with by the community, and that is to win healthcare. And we've had huge victories, obviously. I've crowed about enough, but now it's time to work on public insurance. It's time to, we had a huge win that I haven't talked about much that was with the Oregon Health Plan. Transactive actually did
talk
that
about
work.
That. We got a okay. couple minutes.
Okay. Well, if folks don't know this, for trans-identified kids, it can be a really challenging, you know, if you end up going through puberty with the wrong gender identity, you face years and years and years, and I'm
really?
Talking from personal experience, of trying to, like, go backward and change those things that, you know, and they have, children have access to puberty blockers now, and that's great, and that's used for a number of medically necessary medical purposes, but they're super expensive. They're like hundreds of dollars to access these. And for kids who are on the Oregon Health Plan now, identify as trans, effective in October of 2014, the Oregon Health Plan is going to be covering those from now on. So that was a huge,
that is
huge win.
Huge.
So we're going to continue pushing that work forward, you know, with public insurance. And we're going to continue. There's a lot of companies that, like I said earlier, are governed by ERISA, which is a national law governing healthcare plans for national companies. So we're going to continue on working on that and also working with other states. I think that there's a lot of great work that's being done in California and Oregon and D.C. And we need to, like, work on getting these changes done in Mississippi and Missouri and nationally and internationally. So, and we're actually not ahead of the curve internationally. Argentina and a lot of other places are moving much faster than we are in trans equality.
Go Argentina.
Yeah,
yes, it's so true. Well, I'll just mention Teresa and I traveled to Argentina 2 years ago so that she could have some facial feminization surgery. Mm-hmm. I would say attitudes are light years ahead of where we're at here. And I enjoyed that. Argentina. Yeah, maybe there needs to be a mass egress. Anyway, thank you, Sasha, for joining us. Do you have anything else to add? There's just a couple minutes left. And
no, I just want to say I heart KBOO. I came here early in my transition, and it was such a trans-friendly environment. I recommend folks, you know, get involved with the community, especially if you're trans-identified. It's a totally safe place and nurturing place, and it's been wonderful.
That's a nice endorsement. Thanks. Yeah, you know, we are inclusive. That is us. And I do have an announcement to sort of go out with, a couple of announcements. We mentioned this maybe in passing earlier, or maybe that was before the mics went on.
We were talking about this before the mics went on, but
it's early in it. Mm-hmm. All right. So there is, of course, that Rose Festival parade. It happens tomorrow morning. People that like to see that parade start camping out today. Now, of course,
I saw them.
We're in Portland, and that means it's illegal to sleep on the sidewalk unless there's some sort of big sale at Target or, you know, REI, or you have a Rose Parade to attend to. So to try to illustrate this complete hypocrisy, Right to Survive supporters will be pitching tents along the Rose Festival parade route starting this morning. Houselessness is not a crime is the message of this celebration slash protests. The third annual public campout designed to raise awareness about the criminalization of homelessness in Portland and across the nation begins, just about now at 9 o'clock today, and it continues through midday tomorrow. Participants in Pitch a Tent for Right to Survive will set up tents in downtown Portland along the Rose Festival's parade route. Organizers expect hundreds of people to join them in the event that is both a protest and a celebration. So, 9 o'clock, meet at Right to Dream 2. That's Northwest 4th and Burnside. It's the area with all of those doors that are painted right there by the Dragon Gate. 4th and Burnside downtown. March south to Southwest 4th and Washington at 10 a.m. Setting up tents at Southwest 4th and Washington. At 2 o'clock, join We Are Oregon and Housing is for Everyone as they build a temporary house. You may remember We Are Oregon and Housing is for Everyone from our show last week when we had special guests from that group. At 6 o'clock, there'll be some speakers. It's a full lineup all night long. Mike Crenshaw. Oh, yeah, he was our guest last week. Mm-hmm. I remember that. He'll be performing at 8 o'clock there. There it will be Flamethrowers at 9. B Media Colectivo at 10. Well,
Dancers, Flamethrowers?
Flamethrowers is what it says, but I'm going to go ahead.
I'm thinking it's dancers.
I like flamethrowers. All right. I do. But okay, no, I'm going to guess it's more like dancing and juggling and whatnotting and not actually like, you know, annihilation. Okay. So, but that's tonight and today all day long. And looks like the area to focus on there is about Southwest 4th and Washington, because you probably can't make it to 4th and Burnside unless you're already there by 9 o'clock. So with that, I do want to say happy, very happiest of happy birthdays to my dear friend Zale and my dear dog Neo. They share a birthday.
Happy birthday, Zale.
Happy birthday, Neo.
Yay, Neo. Yay, Zale. Thanks for being alive.
Yeah.
And with that, we're out of time.
Stay
Sasha, thank
exalted.
You so much for joining us this morning.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
And we'll be back next week with David K. Johnson.
That's right.
Yeah.
The David K. Johnson.
That one. Okay, thanks.
Thanks. Bye.
And you are listening to KBOO in Portland. KBOO Portland. Where the time is approximately 9:01 a.m. Coming up this morning at 10 here, Chris Andre with hosting Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, more on how and why the NSA is keeping track of the telephone habits of Americans. Also, more on the Bradley Manning trial and more on Obama's nomination of Samantha Powers to be the next U.S. ambassador to the U.N. At 11, Shahid Hamid hosts It Takes a Village. And at 11:30 on the Radio Zine, Robin Shanti interviews Michael O'Connor of Creative Collaborations about Hump Day, a monthly art and music festival held in Portland's Central East Side Industrial District. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are